This is The Conversation on Hawaii Public Radio. I'm Catherine Cruz. Joining us this morning are Honolulu Deputy Police Chief John McCarthy and the Federal Bureau of Investigation's Tuan Nguyen and Jake Ross. Jake Ross is president of CyberHui, a community of cybersecurity professionals dedicated to sharing skills and knowledge with Hawaii's youth. Welcome to you all.
Thank you.
Now, so far this year, cities like Baltimore, Atlanta, and Denver were hit by cyber crimes that held hostage vital services, life or death services like 911. But let's start with the FBI. Tuan Nguyen, how does the agency look at the cost and of these cyber threats overall?
Good morning, Catherine. Thank you for the opportunity to discuss about a topic that I think is very near and dear to all of us here, not just in Hawaii, but doesn't matter where you live. And the way that we look at cyber crime is that anyone, any one of us, and any organization can potentially become a cyber crime victim. As long as you are connected to the internet in any way, shape, or form, you are potentially a victim. And so that's how important this topic is that we need to look at and who has some responsibility to actually do something about it and how people can actually help. But economically, in 2016, we compiled some data that was collected through our IC3 website, and it was reported to the FBI that over $1 billion worth of loss, and those are the things that were reported. And we don't even know how much damage to the financial area that that people have actually suffered because of cybercrime. And so, and that's just the money that leaving their pockets and leaving the accounts. But you have to take into consideration, too, is that when there's an incident, the cost of recovery from a cyber incident, a breach, if your network goes down. And so in 2015, it was estimated that worldwide, the impact of cybercrime is about $3 trillion.
That's enormous.
That's an enormous amount.
And when folks are victims of hacking, a lot of times they call the police. They call 911. Chief, can you chime in here? What are you seeing?
Sure.
These days?
Your first line of response is the police, and we're constantly trying to deal with that. We're trying to update. Generally speaking, local law enforcement is not prepared to handle this because of training, the cost involved. At the Honolulu Police Department, we've actually started a cybercrime unit. We're hoping to expand it in the future. We handle the investigations. Hawaii has some great cybercrime laws. Thankfully, in good part to Prosecutor Chris Van Marter, who worked on with the legislature, we have crimes that are punishable by a mandatory 20-year jail term in some cases. So we work with those. But again, it's a very labor-intensive type of investigation. It's not like you see in CSI where the crime is committed and we arrest people worldwide within the hour. It's not like that. It's very labor-intensive, involves a high degree of technical skill and a good degree of investigative skills as well.
And, I'm just thinking as far as just in general, we had something recently with Zippies, I mean, a lot of people go to Zippies and now their information is compromised because of a credit card breach.
Most cyber crimes involve targeting financial aspects. The big one, of course, is targeting businesses for credit card information. And that's where you see it's used down the line. There's big problems. I think we need to tighten up on the reporting. These companies have to realize that they have to report it, and they report it as soon as possible to law enforcement so we can prepare. And we need to work with the financial institutions that issue those cards. A lot of companies try to hide it because they're afraid of their business reputation, and it's delayed. In some cases, I've seen that we know of the breach, and it goes on for months before it's finally reported. There's problems in doing that. So I think we need to work on that legislatively. And again, we need to work collectively on the problem. It's not just my problem. It's our problem.
And the CyberHui, I mean, that's what you are, right?
You're
trying to get people together and young people.
We're trying to bring up that next generation because there's a lot of business opportunity. There's like a $3.5 million job shortage anticipated in 2021 for cybersecurity professionals. I mean, we're trying to field them here. Hawaii's a perfect place for it because we have a big DoD industry. You have a lot of academia. I mean, tourism. And you have all these different centers of of like the critical infrastructures here, and we're on an island. So if we can kind of raise that talent and keep them here, then that's a big win for the state, I think. And they're pretty lucrative jobs. So that's kind of like our big thought is we can train the people here, we can kind of see how they grow and progress, and then we're seeing the kids come out of our programs already and enter the job, you know, the workforce.
Now, I know we were chatting earlier, and I've been noticing a number of emails from you know, folks that are on my list saying that they have a change in their security policy. Right. Explain what's going on, because I'm sure lots of people are getting that this week.
So I think the big driver for that is the EU, the European Union. They had a GDPR, the General Data Protection Regulation or Rights. I can't think of the last one. But they had a two-year bake-in where companies had to secure the information of EU citizens and people in the EU. So they need to be able to access their information when they need to, and there are certain safeguards that have to be in place. So some businesses decided that the cost of operating in the EU is too high, so it actually blocked access from EU IP addresses and domains. A lot of other businesses, they can't afford to lose those clientele, like the Facebooks. And, I mean, even NPR sent me hey, your terms and services have changed. Make sure you read them so you understand what's different and how we're complying with that. And the driver is that it's there's huge financial penalties like that'll be charged against like the companies or businesses that violate these terms. And it's so gray right now, like nobody really wants to take the chance. So
all these companies are covering their backs.
Basically right now, when you don't want to be the first one, but I think it'll iron out in the end, but you don't want to be the first one that gets put on the stand and they try and figure it out with your company at your cost.
Right. So the concern about privacy and putting in new rules in Europe is having a ripple effect here in the U.S. And that's why we're getting all these updates.
Right. If you read your terms and services, I mean, I probably don't.
Okay.
So it's General Data Protection Regulation. So.
But that's what's going on.
That's primarily the driver behind a lot of these emails, like your terms and services, whether it be like your Sony, PlayStation Online account or your Facebook or anything.
Okay. And I know data breaches, are probably a big deal and impact most people. I know with the big Equifax breach, I think several of us here at the table were on that list. That was a huge, huge breach. Can you talk about that, Tuan?
Well, the implication for that, for most of us, because we actually work online pretty much now. Half of our accounts are accessible through online services. So it's just a matter of, us needing to take the extra precautionary step to ensure that we are dealing with a reputable company. Although Equifax was a reputable company, but, everyone can potentially be vulnerable. So just be more diligent about sharing your data online, what company you're dealing with and who, you may want to pass your information to. And then check your credit records from time to time. If there are some anomalies on there that you have not seen in the past, is quickly addressing those issues can mitigate, long-term impact for you.
Would you say it would be smart just to use, let's say, a single credit card for doing online purchases?
The way that we see is that we like to recommend that people use one specific computer for all their online accesses, and that's all, not other types of businesses. So segment your businesses, even personal accounts, trying to keep them in one area and you only use one specific computer. That way you can minimize the number of nodes that actually can be breached.
So not so much one card, but one computer. Like, don't just go on your iPhone and your tablet. And
then don't connect all your accounts together.
Like,
a lot of people do a single sign-on when you sign up for a certain service, and then they use the U1 to sign up through Facebook or another account. I don't recommend that. Keep them separated.
And if you're already linked, what do you do? Try and undo that? Is that very hard?
I don't think it's hard to undo, but it's just the convenience, right? So it's the cost for the person. It's like the trade-offs of if I talk to my phone and say, hey, I want a pizza, like whether the pizza gets here in 50 minutes or I have to call and figure out what that is. So those are the trade-offs. And I think society today is a lot more comfortable accepting those risks because we don't really understand the risk.
Okay, but basically one computer, that's what you would advise.
I would advise that.
Okay, all right. Well, if you're just joining the conversation, we're talking about cybersecurity, and we'd like to hear from you. You can join the discussion by calling 941-3689 or 1-877-941-3689 from the neighbor islands. If you're joining us and you haven't heard, our guests in the studio are Honolulu's Deputy Police Chief John McCarthy, the FBI's Tuan Nguyen, and Jake Ross, president of the nonprofit Cyber Hui. So, Chief, what are some of the other issues that the police department is grappling with? I mean, I know we've heard of cyber attacks, let's say, on state government. I mean, do you get involved in that, or do they get the federal authorities in right away?
You know, again, it's a problem with the law. For reporting breaches, all you have to do under state law is to notify a law enforcement agency, not anyone in particular. Then you have to write letters to the Senate President and the Speaker of the House. And that's it. That's the only requirement to report a data breach. We try to get people to call us right away because we can work with their banks or financial institutions to try and stem the problem or to locate who might be responsible. We've had groups that have actually operated out of Honolulu in the past. They're not necessarily all in foreign countries. So speed is really of the essence in reporting this and investigating it.
But the law says report to the Senate President
it
and the House Speaker?
Yes.
But who knows that? And what do they do with it?
It's actually in the law, and the people who have the breach, the attorneys, know to do that.
Oh, I see.
There's a committee that they're supposed to have to actually review the data breach, and I think that needs to be modernized. I think law enforcement has to be drawn into that and play the major role in that. We sit here, and we have a lot of knowledge of where that information is being used, where it can be obtained. And I think the speed of that and law enforcement's expertise in that area needs to be brought in to look at that resolution.
I guess we've been fortunate because we haven't really had any of these major, you know, ransomware issues, you know, that deal with our 911 service or, I don't know,
we've taken a lot of precautions to our infrastructure here, the Honolulu Police Department. We have a lot of records, personal information. We've taken a lot of precautions to make sure that we're not susceptible to that kind of a problem. Same thing with the 911. I know we've worked with some of the infrastructure, Hawaiian Electric, the Board of Water Supply, to make sure that same thing doesn't happen. So that there are a lot of work has been put into this since 9/11 to make sure that this doesn't happen.
And I know I saw an article recently that talked about, the number of attempts that were made on, I think, Hawaiian Electric. So sometimes we don't know that there have been these attempts. It's not in the news, but right. Obviously the IT security folks are tracking that.
There's a lot. Hawaiian Electric has experienced a lot of problems, but not internally. I think the two main... Cybercrime is a hard thing because it's a big term for a lot of crimes. You got to remember, most of it is for financial gain, but it also includes intellectual property theft, espionage, where the FBI plays a big role. There are a lot of other things that could fall under that umbrella, but the big ones are financial crimes. And that's what we're basically looking for. And there's two big vulnerabilities with that. One, ransomware, because they lock up your personal data and get money in return. And we're seeing that's very intelligent the way it's been evolving. The other is insider threats, especially malicious insider threats, where they recruit somebody from within the organization or get somebody to do something to crash your system or expose your system to the outside.
Okay, I believe we have a caller. Oh, we lost a caller. All right. So talk more about the ransomware. I mean, are we seeing the numbers kind of rise here in Hawaii? Does anybody have a good...
ransomware has been steady. It hasn't really significantly increased in recent months, but it's there. You know, the one thing with ransomware is that by the time that you are attacked with a ransomware, there's very little that law enforcement can do to help you at that point. However, you know, we do recommend that they do report the ransomware because what happened is that if we're seeing the same type of attacks in one area, we may be able to help prevent another attack from happening elsewhere just by learning how they actually did it, learning the signature of the malware that was used. And so we encourage people to actually report it when they do have an occurrence of a ransomware. The other thing that we recommend is that, you know, paying the ransom does not always pay. I mean, does not really get the results that you're looking for.
Oh.
Because a lot of times when your network is locked up through an encryption, you know, the promise is that if you pay, they will give you the key to decrypt your data. However, that's not always the case. In fact, most often that's not always the case.
Oh, so you're out the money and then you're still in this.
Right.
You're still screwed.
So the best way really to combat against ransomware is to back up your system. Just to have to make sure you have your data backed up. So if your network is shut down, you can recover very quickly and just kind of forget about it. The bad terminals that are now locked up, you can't use anymore. You just have to
go get another computer.
Exactly.
But on those lines, you need to back up offline, right. Not back up on the system itself, because we've seen where the backups are infected first, then it comes to the front line and you're stuck. You have nothing to back up from. So it's important to back up offline or off the network.
And how often should you do that?
I do it regularly, if not hourly. We've seen the backups get infected just by not doing it on a timely basis. It depends on how much volume you're really doing.
It depends how important that information is to you, too. So if there are financial information, you should probably do those more regularly, or like personal like photos and things that you could never reproduce or recover. You should probably do that daily. And there's like
daily?
There's no cost to it. There's automated backups. You could back up to the cloud through Google, through Amazon, those kind of things. So it just depends on how important that stuff is to you.
And what about the cloud? You know, they're saying put everything on the cloud.
The cloud is just somebody else's computer. It's just like a marketing term. But there's more reliability because there's economies of scales for a company like Amazon to protect their systems at large scale versus like everyday Joe user to make sure that their IP camera that they bought or their fridge isn't gonna be there the way that the bad guys get into their network. So
right, but I know we're hearing our news stories about companies like Uber being targeted, those kinds of things were.
Well, a lot of these companies, security is an afterthought. They're in business to make money, and they don't realize or maintain their network security or even their basic iPhone or laptop security. That has to be part of doing business nowadays, and that's where we see the lapse. It's normally a vulnerability that's taken advantage of. Not if it's a good company, just like was just mentioned about the economy of scale, bigger companies spend more to protect the data and you're safer there.
And what about just kind of basic stuff? Let's say people are on Facebook and you get your Facebook or Twitter account hijacked. There's really not much you can do.
Yeah, I think one of the biggest ones I try and tell people is to use two-factor authentication or multi-factor authentication. So that is, instead of just a username and password, which is one factor, adding you get a text message or SMS, which isn't the most secure, but it's better than just username and password to authenticate through another code, through another means. It'd be like a card, like sometimes they have the DoD, they have common access cards with a chip on it. So you have to have the chip and have the username and the password to authenticate.
That's so humbug.
It is, but how much you value your information and your data. So those are the trade-offs that we have to face.
I know. It's like change your password every 3 months, and you're like, what was that password again? It's just endless.
Your password longer. Right? I think that's another way to try to defeat the bad guys from trying to figure out what your password is. Making it longer, use a phrase instead of a short. Don't repeat your password, and don't share password within different accounts, right? Don't want to use the same password for your Google account versus your Yahoo account versus your banking account, because once one is compromised, potentially, all of them could be.
They get in and pick your pocket that way.
Exactly.
Cool.
Okay. Or sometimes your password that you use on your Yahoo account like 5 years ago, you still use it for your bank, and that Yahoo account's been compromised and you don't know. And they use that password they just spray that password against all the different accounts and they get in.
So. You often hear, too, about, going back to the Zippies thing. If you're at a restaurant and they want your credit card so they can, clear you out, can you say, hey, can you bring that credit card thing to my table so I can see what you're doing and there isn't some... what do they call those devices that...
Like skimmers.
Skimmers, yeah, that skim the information up. I don't know. Is that a practical thing to do?
It depends on the merchant, how much the merchant is invested. Because one of the big things in the conversion from the swipe and sign credit cards to the chip and PIN was the cost of converting their POS systems. So it all depends on them. The technology is there, but did they invest? For example, you can buy these items relatively cheap online. Trade shows do that a lot because they don't have access to the internet right there and then. They'll use these devices and download it at a later time after the trade show is over. So it's there. It's just depending how much, again, what the bottom line for that company is and how much they're willing to spend.
Okay, we do have a caller back online. Tom from the Hamakua Coast, you have a question for the FBI?
Yeah, so this morning there was a report. reading drug reports, the FBI released the information that the Russians have hacked into Wi-Fi routers, which is amazing that they can actually piecemeal the hacks now. And even with a Wi-Fi router, your basic router, such as if you have a Spectrum account, for example, the Wi-Fi router you get from Spectrum comes with a password. It's just amazing. Maybe they could explain how they are able to hack into the password for a Wi-Fi router and how to prevent that. You can't do a double encryption with a Wi-Fi router. You only have one specific password for that. And I'll hang up and listen to the answer.
Okay, thanks, Tom. Fun win?
Now, that's a very technical response. And, you know, the bottom line is anyone can really be potentially be vulnerable, right? Even a big company like Spectrum. And so, you know, go back to my kind of basic premises earlier is that you just got to be real careful about how you segment, you know, your access, the data that you allow access through the internet. And so that way, just to minimize it, I mean, there are ways that we can, you know, work with victims and we can perhaps provide some advice. And that's something we can just call our office and we can talk more about that on the technical side. But for the general user, it's basically segment your data, not allow a single point of entry to access everything that you have that's sensitive to your company or your individual accounts.
But when it's like Spectrum, which supplies your internet service, I mean, I don't know. I don't really.
Those routers, again, it was a vulnerability that was taken advantage of. They're not. You have to think about it. The hackers are not going to come into individual homes. What's the odds of, right. You know, they're really stretching it when they get to that point. Mm. They'll take advantage in broader ways with websites that are compromised and that you going there. But going into an individual home, and a lot of these, it's the router, not Spectrum per se. And that router has, although it has security, you can change those passwords, right. And those passwords are long. So it's what the caller's talking about, there was another method that they actually got in on a large scale, and they weren't talking necessarily about home routers.
Yeah, we're talking about password reuse. A lot of these routers are like commodity IP devices like cameras, refrigerators. They ship with default credentials that are kind of baked into the product, and then those can be exploited sometimes. I mean, in this case, what I would do, what I would recommend is making sure that you don't have access from the internet from Russia to get to that device. So you can disable external access to those devices on that device. So you'd have to log in through the administrative console and say, don't allow anyone to connect to this device from the internet. Only allow people to connect from the inside. And that would like limit your attack surface from the outside. So those are those kind of things. It's like you don't want to be you don't have to be faster than the bear, right? Just be faster than the person next to you. Or
okay.
Because they're going to hit the low-hanging fruit. And right. There's websites that will say, like, you know, these are all the types of devices they go out and scan and that are vulnerable to this. So you can just pick your IP and start whacking at them.
Okay. We have another caller, I believe on line two, Annie from Kaneohe. You have a question? Hi, Annie. Are you there? Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Yes, hello.
Yes, what's your question?
My question is, I have a problem going on right now where there's a bunch of people putting me online having sex. They're doing sex trafficking on me and pornography, and they're laser beaming me. They have laser beams, and I tried to tell the FBI about it. I did call them. Now, I wanted to find out if I can do data recovery by hiring someone to get all of these things offline. They have me on Facebook and the regular way of getting in.
Tuan, any ideas how you can protect yourself from something like that? I don't know.
I'm not familiar with this particular case, but like I mentioned earlier, you know, you just have to change your password is one way. If you feel like your social media accounts have been hacked by someone who's actually using that account to send messages and images, then change your password, right? And hopefully, you know, that will actually limit someone's ability to access your accounts and using it for other purposes.
And we talked about how sometimes folks don't report things like ransomware because maybe they went to like a porn site and they're too embarrassed to admit that they went there and they picked up this virus. Can you talk about that, Chief?
There's an embarrassment factor to this as well. Did I do something wrong? Am I on the wrong site? Because ransomware actually had its basis in the porn industry. This might sound stupid to say, but one of the safest sites to go to today is the porn because that's their business. They make their money, so they've strengthened their security tremendously well over the years. They've learned to, you know, protect themselves. I think some businesses might actually learn by that. But again, you know, it has to be reported. You've got to your biggest friend in this whole thing is yourself, learning what to do, taking the necessary precautions, watching where you go. You know, the security of the internet is not secure. There's nothing on the internet that's really secure or safe. This old saying, what goes on the internet stays on the internet. It's all over. It's permanent. It doesn't go away. So you've really got to be careful on that.
And I know I went through a media training thing on the web, and they had talked about kind of the dark side, that there's this and I forget the term that they use, but you go down into the depths and you pick up all kinds of nasty stuff, and that's how they hack into
That's changing as well, because we used to talk about the dark web. Now we talk about the deep web, the dark deep web. Mm. It's changing, and that's becoming more open with the creation of apps and just the modernization of technology. It's getting more and more accessible. It's where at once you had to go through a certain route to get there, a certain router. Now it's almost open to get there.
Okay, so talk about apps. What should we know about apps?
Ah, good thing. Apple, I can tell you, and this is not a commercial, but Apple tends to vet all of their apps. So because they've run pretty much a closed system on the iOS, their system is checked. The apps are checked for vulnerabilities, and they're updated constantly. When you go to – I would never – as an Apple owner, I would never go outside the iTunes store or – the iPad store to buy or get an app. There's early on what some of the other companies did was, you know, here's a free flashlight software. Well, that flashlight software was loaded with malware, giving them access to your phone. With Google and the PC, that's an open source type of system, so there's not as much vetting. There's more vulnerability there, and it's a lot more risky downloading some of these apps and using these apps.
So how do you know if your app is a bad one?
I think it's kind of the wisdom of the crowd. You do some research. So for the Play Store, they don't vet the apps. I mean, there are some safeguards. They recently banned like a bunch of apps that were from North Korea, which is probably a good thing to like ban those specific ones. But it's like if you look at reviews, you see how many, the number of downloads. If they look two similar apps and one has 10 million downloads and one has 4,000 or something, those are the questionable ones. So you're just kind of using your common sense to guide you through this process. But you're going to inherit risk anytime you download an app, whether it be through overall maliciousness, like it's going to just steal your things outright, or whether it's excessive permissions. Because if you get a free app, I mean, there's nothing free. Like, you're the customer. Your data is what they're after.
Okay. And so what do you do if you have kids and, you know, who have phones and iPhones and are downloading apps? I mean, how do you deal with that?
I don't know. I think it's education, right? So a lot of what we do and we teach is cybersecurity education to be in the profession. But I think it's just awareness. It's like understanding that the things that you do and you put out there, there's archive. There's bots that go out and record everything. There's nothing that you can hide, like you were saying. Mm-hmm. So even just being aware of that is of that stuff, that your behavior matters and people can see what you're doing, and you're not private. Whether you say you snap something or you take a picture, like those things go places.
It is education, but the marketers play to the youth. We see the young adults, teenagers doing things that we would never dream of doing, and they take their risky behavior is carried over onto the internet and their use of technology. So again, it does create a lot of problems. The key is education and responsibility. How far we're going to take that, it all depends.
Okay. Well, if you're just joining the conversation, we're talking about cybersecurity, and we would like to hear from you. Join the discussion by calling 941-3689 or 1-877-941-3689 from Neighbor Islands. You know, I just recall being as a parent, the stress level of trying to keep ahead of my two teenagers. You know, they were into Facebook, and then we don't do Facebook anymore. It's for old people. You know, and they're into Instagram, and then the other one that just, like, disappears after they
Snapchat.
All the new things come up every day. So, you know, I was glad when they, you know, aged out and I have to worry about that so much anymore. But it is a challenge because, you know, kids are getting cell phones. I mean, it's such a young age. It's unbelievable.
Cell phones aren't cell phones anymore. They're computers.
Right.
But, you know, one of the things I did with my children was you want to go on social media. That's all fine and good. But dad's number one friend. So I get to look at it. I get to sort of – and it's not the matter that I'm spying, but I know where they're going, if it's safe or not, because, you know, we've had a lot of sexual predators that have – you know, they're out there lurking all the time. You see, it doesn't stop. As much as they've been caught in the publicity of it all, they're still there, and they've adapted to the use of social media as well. So, I mean, as a parent, if you're there, not necessarily, you know – spying on your children, but keeping abreast of them and trying to learn. It's hard for us because they're much more savvy in this. They're growing up with it. When we were born, or at least when I was born, there were no computers.
Right.
You know, there were supercomputers the size of a room, nothing like that. So, you know, just learning and keeping up with them and, you know, maintaining that relationship. If not, you lose it because there was an experiment out of Washington with some of these tech companies that we don't look up anymore. You constantly, when you're walking, you're looking down, texting, you're on the internet. You know, there's no social interaction anymore. So we're losing those skills. I think it's important to maintain that with the children and, you know, your coworkers. I see people sit at a table and you're texting across the table.
Right, right. And I've heard in the deaf community that they're saying that the cell phones are terrible for American Sign Language because the people aren't signing anymore and they're just they're texting. And so then they're getting a little rusty with their language. So, you know, all these really interesting implications, social implications.
Right. Well, you know, one of the key things I think is not to be a slave to technology, but master technology. Learn about it. It's not that hard. You can learn as you go, and it's a constant. Every day you learn something, you do something. So I think it's mastering technology rather than being a slave to it and not knowing what's going on.
Now, I have to kind of like rewind a little bit and go back to the false missile alert that we had earlier this year, because I know when everybody got that on their cell phones, they were thinking, oh, it's got to be a hack. This isn't, you know. And now the concern is, well, okay, it wasn't a hack. It was human error. It was a mistake. But, you know, what are the chances that we could get another one and someone has actually hacked into our system? Tuan, I don't know.
Well, actually, I wouldn't be able to speak directly about that. That was a human error. So it wasn't really a cyber issue. And so I'm not sure if it's actually related to this specific.
Well, I was just thinking because it did cause a lot of panic. I mean, yes, but that was my first reaction was this must be a hack or something.
You bring up a good point because a lot of these scams, a lot of these different identity theft schemes, they all were there going back to the old snake oil salesman in the West. But now the internet gives you a worldwide platform. I can reach millions of people in a fraction of the time. So could something like that happen? Conceivably, it can. I just got to have the knowledge and technological skills to make it look like that. But it's not hard. We've seen it come out on various scams on the phones with texting. Walmart was the victim of one. You know, there were other companies where they would text you, that text back to me, you want something. So it's not hard to do. It wouldn't be. The government, fortunately, takes the time to include security. That's why it's costly. To prevent these kinds of things. But private business, on the other hand, like we were talking earlier, it's down to their bottom line. Do I spend money on security or do I increase my profit margin a bit?
Okay. And Jake Ross, you look like you were maybe
just kind of nodding along.
No,
I'm just kind of nodding along. I mean, I think that system, so based on what we're talking about, OSINT, open source intelligence, you can find out a lot of information online. So that specific system, I think, is a fairly regulated system. And they have all that rigor and standards put into it to protect that information. But if there is someone who's motivated and has a means to do that kind of thing, like they could send that out, but who would do that, right? So it'd probably be a state actor or something, or
right. Well, I was just thinking it did kind of cause so much stress and terror, and if a terrorist really wanted to, you know, just play with folks, that might be something that they would do.
One time we did have cybercrime where you would get a text that I was offered a contract to kill you. I've been watching you, but I like you. Why don't you just pay me off? And people were terrified by that. When you think about it, average, your John Doe average citizen, there's no reason to have a contract murder on him. Mm-hmm. So, but these people were terrified, and we talked to them later. Of course, it's just a scheme to get you to part from your money, but it can inflict that sort of thing. Cyberbullying is another big problem where it bothers. We've seen suicides and homicides as a result of this kind of behavior
here in Hawaii.
Not in here. I can't say I know of any here in Hawaii, but nationally, yes.
I mean, that's scary. Mm-hmm.
And to go back to John's point about the, potentially messages that are coming across your cell phone and what you were talking about earlier, I think the way that we would like to see is that when you get a message, if it's unfamiliar, just take a step back and really figure it out, is it a legitimate message that you're receiving, where it's coming from? Right, and a very similar to that, we have another area that we're seeing a growth in issues too, is that the business email compromise. So people are getting emails thinking that they're coming from their bosses, instructing them to do a certain thing, and without even thinking about it, they actually go ahead and execute whatever that function is. In this particular area, it usually involves a wire transfer, sometimes with a large amount of money. So when you see a message from your CEO and you're the person who actually does wire transfer on a daily basis, sometimes we don't even think twice about it. You click the button, you send the money, then you realize, well, it didn't really make sense, right? And then you start looking back and say, well, it's not your CEO after all. It was someone who may have hacked into his email account and studied the business enough to know when a logical wire transfer was about to happen and intercepted that process and inserted a fictitious banking account. So that's where the money was sent to. And so that's a problem that we're seeing a lot, but that's a problem that can be reversible if law enforcement is notified quickly.
Okay, but a lot of it is just double check
everything.
He brings up a good point. We've seen a lot of that here in Hawaii. It's called spear phishing, where they're directly it's a form of social engineering. They compromise your email accounts and then pretend to be a boss or a financial institution directing or another business directing you to send those wire transfers off. But we've seen large losses here in Hawaii due to that. And we've tracked money, just to give you how the jurisdictional issue goes, we've tracked that money back to Southeast Asia and we've tracked it as far away to the Middle East. And that money moves fast. That's why the importance for law enforcement to get involved as soon as possible. So we're able to stop it along the way if we know, but if you report it days from now, the money really moves fast. These guys are professionals at what they do. Once that money hits where they want it to be, it's out.
Well, we often hear of the identity theft when it comes to things like your tax returns. The IRS has, has instituted, and the state tax department has instituted some double checks just to make sure that money's not going out the front door when the taxpayer hasn't even filed their returns yet.
Yeah. I know the IRS, I know they estimated in one district they lost $1 billion several years ago in false federal income tax claims. They've taken a lot of steps to do that, but it's slowed down the process of
your
tax returns. But that's a good thing. You're going to get your money. You just got to wait a little longer so we're not losing it. I mean, think of a company losing $1 billion. The numbers that are involved here are really staggering when you think about it. And we have no real grip on it because the reporting systems and the jurisdiction, it's worldwide, not peculiar to just Honolulu, and everybody reports the crime.
Is there anything else that you think is top of mind for your agencies, either a particular type of crime that you're seeing that's on the rise here?
I mean, not for me, but I kind of comment on the tax fraud and credit card fraud. One of the things that people recommend is doing a credit card freeze. So you sometimes have to pay a fee and it freezes your credit so no one can open new credit on behalf of you. So instead of monitoring your credit all the time, just put a freeze on it. They can't touch it. They can't move it without unfreezing it, which they're not going to go through that extra step. So they'll move on to the next credit card number or information to open another credit card account. So
there are a lot of protections when it comes to credit cards. So, credit card freeze, you can monitor your credit. Mm-hmm. There's simple things like I think Barclays is doing it now and other credit cards where they actually enroll you into your credit score. So you monitor that. If you see a big drop in your credit score suddenly and you didn't
do anything,
it's time to start checking. But there's protections there. Again, but speed is of the essence. Here in Hawaii, police department, we worked very closely with Secret Service years ago and started monitoring organized crime groups that come to Hawaii with credit cards that were compromised. About 5 years ago, we actually did a crew that was based out of New York, and they hit those tourist spots. They go to Arizona, California, Hawaii, Florida, the Caribbean islands. And what they were doing was they had credit cards that were skimmed at a restaurant in the southeastern United States, sold to another country, bought back from that country. The cards were made, and this group would go all over using those cards, unbeknownst to the cardholders. And the reason they like that is if law enforcement doesn't get onto it fast, you don't know until your next statement comes.
Right, and they're already out of town. Right?
Yeah, they're gone. They come into Honolulu closer to the weekend, hoping that we can't do things because it's the weekend, and they stay 3 to 5 days and they're out. Some of these groups we've tracked, as little as 3 days, they'll walk away with about $500,000 worth of merchandise that they purchased using stolen credit cards.
Wow, that's crazy. Well, if you've been a victim of hacking or identity theft or cybercrime, we'd like to hear your story if you're willing to share it. That number to call, 941-3689 or 1-877-941-3689 from the neighbor islands. I'm just trying to think. Real quickly, folks, to protect themselves, FBI suggests using maybe one computer, change your passwords frequently, back up your computer and your information.
Back up offline.
Offline.
And I can see using the one computer, but another thing is don't mix your business and personal. A lot of times what we're starting to see, too, is trends where business credit cards are compromised because of personal use. Or the mixing of personal business. We even had, believe it or not, with one of our city and county cards that was used to purchase, a legitimate purchase, city purchase, where the crooks got a hold of it and started using it on other sides to buy things. So, you know, trying to keep it separate because they had what they had done was merge their commercial account with their private account. So when one got compromised, the other got compromised. So don't mix the two as well. Using one credit card has always been a safe, solid idea. Some credit cards offer better protection for online purchases than others.
Really?
They've gotten pretty much unified, but some still, they go that extra mile to watch you online.
So are there reviews on credit card companies?
There's a whole bunch of things. Yeah. You can Google that, and the credit card companies and the different agencies, financial institutions come out and tell you what they offer. It's all part of a marketing scheme. I might give you more money for doing this or more protection for doing that.
Now, I know at the beginning of this year we saw some cities being hit with things like transportation, you know, and, you know, we'll be getting rail down the road and, you know, they've got those cards that link everything, right, your bus pass with the rail. But, you know, I mean, that's a, you know, key transportation, you know, issue, and if folks are depending on that service, and
I can't talk about the rail specifically right now, but I can tell you we've done in Honolulu, the state of Hawaii, we've done a lot to protect infrastructure. I think it's always a topic at their private meetings. We have relationships with them from the government to the private business to make sure that things like this don't happen.
I think, right, he was talking about segmentation, and that goes the same for using separate computers or separate systems. So for rail, like the things that make the train move, the control systems would be on one network, and then there'd be something else for like the Wi-Fi for the people to get on. So I think Boeing, I can't remember if it was the Dreamliner, the 787, the initial concept is to have like the avionics and things integrated with the same system that the personal entertainment uses. And then they're like, well, that's a bad idea because if somebody pops one system, they can move laterally to the other system. So it's just smart architecture from the beginning. You know, it's like a pound of prevention an ounce of prevention versus a pound of cure kind of thing. That thinking ahead of that, like they're probably with rail or those considerations are in place, it's going to help us down the road.
Wi-Fi is a problem. I'm sorry.
Yes.
You just brought up an idea, open source Wi-Fi. You go to airports and
just about to bring that up. What happens when you travel?
I was actually in an airport where I could see the airport's official Wi-Fi system. Then there was another one that was spoofed just by changing the letters around. So because of my background, I knew it was a spoofed website. But if I go to that particular, I access the Wi-Fi through them and not through the official site, it's a problem. They can see and read everything or copy everything I do. But even doing anything in an open source, it's all right. Go on, read the newspaper, look at MSN, Yahoo, whatever site you want to look at. But I would never conduct any kind of personal business or put any kind of passwords on an open source Wi-Fi like that.
I know that when you stay in hotels, there are folks, I think it was in Silicon Valley, I think, where hackers were targeting hotels in the Bay Area just to be able to get in that way.
VPNs are a good idea. Yeah. I mean, I connected to your open Wi-Fi when we walked in, and I fired up my VPN just to encrypt my traffic through. Yes. So you want to protect your information. So a VPN is a virtual private network. So it allows you to tunnel your traffic through an open source, encrypt that, and get out, pop out someplace else that you trust. And they're pretty inexpensive.
When I travel, that's what I do. They've got it very inexpensive. There's apps now for that are trustworthy. So the VPN is the way to go when you travel.
Okay. We have another caller on the line from the Big Island. Sachi, what's on your mind? Hi, Sachi.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hi. I received a text message from someone who wanted to buy a painting from me for a really weird. I'm an artist. My name is Sachi. I'm from the Big Island. A very large amount of money for a painting, which I was very suspicious about. And she said, "Oh no, I really want it. I travel a lot. Blah 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 blah." And I've been to Asia, it was Chicago, and I need you to send the painting to such and such an address. Anyway, I got the check in the mail, which was weird because it was way too much, more than what she said. And then I texted her back and said, this is more than what you said you were going to send. And she said in the text, could you just send that extra back to me? It was like $2,000 more, for shipping and blah, blah, blah. She said, "I'm sorry, I spent too much. Just send me that back with the painting." So when I called the bank and I said, "I have a suspicion that this is a fake check." And they said, "Yes, it was a fake check. Our checks go horizontally, not vertically." And I sent a picture of it. So that was that. And I called the FBI and gave them the information. But it was...
Yeah, really Sachi, weird. What you're talking about is a real common form. It's a form of fraud called advance fee fraud, where there's several ways that they do it, but they give you the money up front using a fraud check. And what they do is you'll probably lose the merchandise, and if you were not sharp enough, like you called the bank and found out it was fraud, you cash the check and you send them back a whole bunch of money, and about a week or two later you find out the check's no good and you're out the money and the merchandise.
So good for you, Sachi, for trusting your instincts. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, the other thing I was going to say about the how to protect your company or your personal account, we always recommend that someone either at home or within your company should be in charge of cybersecurity. Sometimes we kind of lose sight of that. We assume someone is actually responsible for that and just doing their job. But unless someone is responsible, sometimes you do not have a cohesive plan for your company, especially a small company, on how do you deal with cyber crime, right? And so designating someone to take responsibility for that is important. But the other part, too, is that for bigger corporations, bigger companies, they should always have an integration between cybersecurity and operations. Sometimes, operation has a different motivation. They want the network to be up and running all the time. Security side wants it to be more locked down. And so sometimes they do have to compromise, and one shouldn't be kind of overtaking the other's priorities. Working together, they can actually have a more effective plan for the company. If you are allowing operation to drive your cybersecurity, sometimes you may not have sufficient security protocol in place to do that. So the integration of the two sides are very, very important. Within an organization.
Okay, and then important, too, for businesses out there, if you suspect something, report to authorities right away. Don't delay because you put your customers at risk.
Extremely important. We cooperate. Again, going back to the jurisdictional issue, it's 90% or more happens outside our jurisdiction, but the victims are here. The faster we learn about it, the faster we can work with the financial institution, our federal partners, and other state and local law enforcement agencies, but just the speed with which we need to move, it's critical in these cases.
Okay, and Jake, any last thoughts?
No, I mean, like, we're kind of talking about, like, what Sachin experiences. If it doesn't seem right, like, ask questions, call back. We had we were processing a mortgage recently, and then the person called saying, hey, I want to check some information, so I'm going to call the bank. And I'm like, you know, let me just call you back. Let me call my financial guy, and then we'll get the number, and I'll call you back. Because this whole thing seems pretty weird.
Pretty fishy.
But it was legit.
Oh,
it was actually
okay,
legit. So,
go.
I mean, but you want to just verify and stuff. So, yeah.
All right. Well, thank you. We'd like to thank all our guests, Deputy Police Chief John McCarthy, FBI's Tuan Nguyen, and Jake Ross of CyberHui. And we thank you, the listener, for joining us on today's show. We'll be right back after a short break. This is The Conversation.
Support for Hawaii Public Radio comes from Achieve 3000, combining current research in education with feedback from Hawaii students and educators to help provide improved academic impact. Achieve3000.com/Hawaii.
Muddy Waters plugged in his guitar and the blues were never the same again. In the Atherton studio on June 2nd, Rick Smith and the Trailer Park Romeos pay homage to this original Rolling Stone, whose influence stretched from the Mississippi Delta to the British rock bands. Call us during business hours or go to hprtickets.org for this Muddy Waters tribute. Sponsored by Bonnie Rice and the Rice Partnership Wealth Management.
Support for The Conversation comes from the HPR Local Talk Show Fund, which helps Hawaii Public Radio sustain and grow its locally produced talk shows. Mahalo to contributors Locations, Ekahi Ornish Lifestyle Medicine, and Hawaii Pacific University.
If your call didn't make it on the air during today's discussion, you can still contact the talkback line and record your comments. That number is 808-792-8217. You can also send us an email at talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org. And if you want to listen back to today's show, check out the Conversation podcast at hawaiipublicradio.org. I'm Catherine Cruz. Oh, and a program reminder, the show Innovation Hub, Making Things Better, will air on Memorial Day in place of The Conversation. So we'll see you back on air Tuesday. Join us then for more of The Conversation.